It's time for this week's edition of the Virtual Bible Study. The Virtual Bible Study is a live, internet-only call-in program dedicated to the honest study and discussion of God's Word. Do you have a question about something in the Bible, or are you simply interested in learning more about the Scriptures? If so, we hope you'll stay tuned tonight as we look into the pages of God's Word. The Virtual Bible Study is brought to you this time each week by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. You can participate in the discussion tonight by calling 931-381-4567 or by emailing your questions or comments from collegeview.com. We hope you'll take out your Bibles and study along with us as we begin an exciting study of God's Word on this edition of the Virtual Bible Study.
We welcome you into the Virtual Bible Study for Thursday, January 14th, 2016. Thank you for joining us on the program tonight. My name is Jacob Gwynn. My father, Greg Gwynn, is here. Hello, Dad.
Jacob, great to be with you tonight.
Second program of 2016. Glad to be here tonight and to look forward to a timely topic.
Well, you know, I think we do have a timely topic. It's been all in the news, and lots of people have been talking about this big Powerball drawing that happened last night. I understand that there were some winners. The jackpot had reached $1.5 billion, largest ever, biggest record jackpot, and people were racing around to buy lottery tickets.
Yeah, I saw the they were selling $600 million worth of tickets every hour.
Yeah,
last night.
Yeah, and so obviously they didn't lose any money on the Powerball.
No, they don't lose any money on that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But people were, we're in Tennessee. Unfortunately, now you can buy lottery tickets in Tennessee. We fought that battle several years ago and lost it.
Yeah.
But I saw a news article where our neighbors to the south in Alabama, where they still can't buy lottery tickets, were streaming north to Tennessee in order to get a chance to lose their money in the Powerball drawing.
Yeah. Every one of them did.
Yeah. We thought it's been, I think, almost 10 years since we last talked about gambling. We've talked about it before on the Virtual Bible Study, but you suggested maybe it would be a good time to review what's wrong with gambling. And so that's what we want to talk about tonight.
All right. We'll look forward to hearing from you at 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeview.com. If you're in the chat room tonight, below your video feed is the window where you can sign in with other listeners and chat about the topic tonight, and we have some questions you sent out earlier today.
Yeah, to our update list earlier today, we always remind you to get on our list by sending us an email to questions@collegeview.com. Say, put me on the list. We will. You'll get our midday Thursday update telling you what our topic is and asking you some questions that we're going to be discussing during the program. Today, we sent out these questions. Number one, what is the proper definition of gambling, and what elements are necessary before an activity becomes gambling?
Okay.
Number two, is it gambling to take a risk of any kind, to buy or sell stocks, to have insurance, to compete for or accept prizes? Now, but what we're trying to do here is hone in on what exactly are we talking about when we talk about gambling that is a sin. We think we are going to be able to say it's a sin. But not everything that some people might associate as gambling is necessarily fits the bill of sinful gambling.
Okay.
So we're trying to get a handle on the definition. Number three is the amount of money or value of a thing critical in determining if the activity is gambling.
Are you you're asking that because the Powerball ticket was just $2?
You only had spent $2.
Yeah.
So I mean, is that bad? Is that really bad?
Right.
Number four, if you think gambling is not a sin, state the reasons why. We may not get any answers to that. But number five, if you think gambling is a sin, that's where we're coming from, state the reasons why. We'll talk about why the reasons, what the reasons we think gambling is a sin. If you don't think it is, by all means, please correspond with us either by email or in the chat room, or we got the phone open with a toll-free number, 877-381-4567. Come on in and tell us why you think that buying that $2 Powerball ticket would not be sinful. We'd love to hear that, because that's not where we're coming from. We'll tell you that right up front. But if you think that would be an acceptable thing to do, please tell us why.
All right. We want to hear from you again. The toll-free line is open, or just sign in the chat room and send your thoughts in there. Lots of buzz about it this week. Everybody was, seemed everybody was playing it. So
You know, it's much in the news, but gambling goes on all the time. I've got some rather dated studies here, but the University of Michigan says that 2 out of every 3 Americans gambles every year.
2 out of 3.
The average wager in legal gambling exceeds $50 billion a year. And total gambling activity, according to U.S. News, is in the trillions of dollars, because there's a lot of illegal gambling going on, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's probably way more illegal gambling than there is legal gambling. Gallup says 60% of the U.S. population gambles, 80% approve of legal gambling. Mm. And almost all states, I think there's only 8 states now, maybe 8 or 12, I can't remember what I heard the other day, that don't have some sort of a lottery.
All right.
One of the things that I think is kind of interesting is this is not a new question. This is not a new activity. This has been going on for a long time, and it's been a problem in the church for a long time. The second century Christian writer Tertullian wrote, now get this, he was writing as a Christian in the second century A.D., I mean, just shortly after the church began. He said, if you say you are a Christian when you are a dice player, you say what you are not, because you are a partner with the world.
Wow.
So that gives you the idea that they were battling this issue,
right?
You know, just shortly after the church began. There were people in the church who were engaged in gambling, and they were being condemned for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we think it's a worthy subject to discuss.
All right. We have Monty behind the controls tonight. Monty, thank you for coming to be a part of the program. It's been a long time since we've had you here. Well, I forgot how to turn your microphone on.
I said, thank you, Jacob. It's good to be back.
Good to have you here. And I don't know, were they around the shop this week talking about how they were going to strike it rich?
Actually, I hadn't heard nobody mention it at work.
You hadn't?
I was at the hardware store right near where I live in our small community, and talking to the guy as I was checking out, and something was said about the Powerball, and he said, I'm buying. And he went on to explain that several of them had joined together in a pool and were buying multiple tickets, you know, and they would share the winnings if they won. But he wasn't going to pass up on a good deal like that.
Oh, he said it was a good deal.
Yeah, he thought that it would just be crazy to pass up on a chance to win that billion-dollar-plus Powerball lottery.
All right.
So let's dive into this, Jacob. I think with lots of things, this in particular, it's really important for us to get a good handle on what we're talking about as far as gambling, the kind that we're condemning, you know, the kind of gambling we think the Bible would condemn. We need to know what constitutes it. Is it a sin? One of the things people challenge, how can you say that gambling is specifically sinful when the Bible doesn't even mention it? Would you agree? I would agree. That
I guess I will.
The Bible doesn't even use the word gamble.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
It never says thou shalt not gamble.
It never says
gambling is a sin. It never says that. And so some people say, how can you say it's a sin when the Bible doesn't even say so? It doesn't even name it. How can you say it's a sin? We'll try to deal with that.
That's a more broad question. Does the Bible have to explicitly condemn it by name before it condemns the action? That's a bigger question. Go ahead.
And then here's another question. How can you condemn that person who's buying that $2 lottery ticket when you invest in the stock market and maybe lose $1,000 if the stock market takes a big downturn? You lost $1,000. This guy just lost $2 buying a lottery ticket. You lost $1,000 on the stock market. How come you're saying he's wrong and you claim you're not?
Right.
So those are the kind of questions we got to deal with.
Okay. All right, guest 3588 in the chat room. Would you like to see people worship in the same lines that were buying those pieces of paper? Worship has real hope, and gambling is worldly.
Yeah, it would be great to see people as excited about going to worship services as they were excited to get in line, stand in line, in order to buy lottery tickets.
That's right, and that's an excellent point. Thank you, 3588. There is hope that comes with God, and with the worldly possessions of the earth, there is no hope. So good comment. Thank you for that.
Let's start out by just giving some definitions from some dictionary sort of sources. I got Webster's Dictionary says to gamble, to play a game for money or property. I think that may be oversimplistic. World Book Dictionary says to play games of chance for money or other valuable stakes. That may still not really, I think, do the job carefully enough. World Book Encyclopedia says gambling is betting on the outcome of a future event. Gamblers usually bet money or something else of value as a stake on the outcome they predict. When the outcome is settled, the winner collects the loser's stake. I think that's getting a lot closer to the kind of definition that we're looking for.
Right. Okay. You may have to reiterate those elements then that are required.
Okay, let me read that definition again, and then we'll talk about what are the necessary elements here. World Book Encyclopedia says, gambling is betting on the outcome of a future event. Gamblers usually bet money or something else of value as a stake on the outcome they predict. When the outcome is settled, the winner collects the loser's stake.
Yeah.
So, from that definition, I think it's a good definition. I think that's the most thorough of the definitions we read. From that definition, I'd say there got to be at least three things present to make a thing a real gambling proposition.
Okay.
One would be an uncertain event. Now, that's an uncertain event that is arbitrarily determined. In other words, you know, we don't know how this is going to turn out. It could go either way. We're not certain. It's going to, you know, so it has to be an uncertain event. There has to be a stake,
mm-hmm.
not a steak like the steak you eat, but a stake, S-T-A-K-E, something of value that you put at risk or chance, you agree on beforehand. I'll bet you $5 that, you know, this number will be in the Powerball position on the lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there probably was some of that going on. No, they were betting on officially through Powerball and betting unofficially on Powerball.
Mm-hmm.
But again, so something of value is put up to be won or lost.
Right.
And then there must be a winner and a loser. You know, for it to be gambling, you put up something of value and make it available. I put up something available and make it valuable and make it available. We are trying to predict the outcome of this event. Who's going to win the presidential election? You say Donald Trump. I say Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you $100.
Right.
That Hillary will beat Donald Trump in the election.
So we both have $100.
So we got $100 up. One of us is going to lose $100. So when the outcome of the election is determined, then if you're right, you get you keep your $100 and you get mine. If I'm right, I keep my $100 and get yours. But there's a winner and a loser in this sort of a gambling proposition that we're talking about.
All right. What do you think about gambling? Then those elements. 3588 says greed is a sin, and we're going to get to that as to why gambling is wrong. We think that's one of the fundamental reasons why it is wrong is that greed. And so there's a risk, an uncertain event, and I'm putting something of value at stake along with you, and one of us is going to win and one of us is going to lose.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. We got an email from Kyle, our friend Kyle, who sometimes is running the board. He says he's not feeling well tonight, so Kyle, get better out there. He says, the Bible does not say thou shalt not play the lottery, but it does condemn it on principle. And that's what we're gonna go to. And I think he's exactly right. You were saying earlier, how can you condemn gambling when the Bible doesn't even mention the word? It condemns it not because it says the word, but because it condemns the underlying principles and activities that are involved in it.
I dare say there are some who would be hesitant to condemn something unless it's explicitly condemned in the Bible. And if that is the case, we couldn't condemn things like adultery. We couldn't condemn embezzlement. I mean, what other things could you not condemn if it had to be explicitly stated verbatim?
Yeah.
And so I appreciate Kyle for saying that.
Yeah, exactly right.
All right.
All right, let's take our break, and when we get back, let's talk, before we can go into what's wrong with gambling and why it's a sin, I think we need to spend a little time talking about some things that are not sinful gambling. Like, I think we need to include a discussion about buying stocks, buying and selling stocks, buying insurance, getting prizes, that sort of thing. But let's do that. Let's get our break, and when we come back from our break, let's talk about some of the things that people say. Well, you buy stocks on on Wall Street, same thing. Let's talk about that.
You drive your car into traffic.
Same thing.
That's a gamble.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. The Virtual Bible Study will continue right after this.
You won't want to miss what we talk about next. The discussion continues right after these important messages.
Hi, I'm Anthony Petrochko, a member of the College View Church of Christ. Thanks for listening to the virtual Bible study. We want to remind you that our website, www.collegeview.com or www.thevirtualbiblestudy.com, has lots of valuable study tools available for your use. First, you can find archives of all our past programs there. We've covered a wide variety of topics, including doctrinal issues, moral and ethical questions, and many things related to living daily as a Christian. And while we don't have a search engine option on our website, remember that you can hit Control F and type in a keyword. You'll then see that keyword highlighted on the page. For instance, if you hit Control F and typed in the word worship, you'd find these past programs that we've conducted. Does it matter how we worship? What about contemporary worship and hand clapping? Are worship pleasing to God or pleasing to man? And instrumental music in worship. That's just an example, but you get the idea as to how the web page can be used to help in your study of various subjects. Also remember that we have copies of our church bulletin on the website, and these bulletins include articles on hundreds of topics. You'll also find some recorded sermons, some Bible tracts, as well as information about the College View Church. So be sure to check out the valuable resources on our website. Again, the address is collegeview.com or thevirtualbiblestudy.com. And thanks again for listening to the virtual Bible study. Be sure to tell others.
Here's some quotes worth pondering. Faith that does not act is a faith that is just an act. What if God was only faithful when he felt like it, only dependable part of the time, only loving on special occasions? If you say it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you are sincere, you miss a very important point. That is, you can be sincerely wrong. There is no glue that holds a family together better than a mutual awareness of God and His will. Parenting is not a sprint, it's a marathon. Answer the big question of eternity and all the little questions of life fall into perspective. The Christian life is a pilgrimage from earth to heaven, and our task is to take as many as possible with us as we make this journey. By God's mercy, we don't get what we deserve, but rather by His grace, we get what we don't deserve. Man, wish I'd said that.
We're waiting to hear from you. Call in right now and join in on the virtual Bible study. Now, back to the program.
We're back on the program tonight talking about gambling. Is it wrong? What do the scriptures teach? Let us know your thoughts. We look forward to hearing from you.
I really think our definition is so important here because if you've got an uncertain event, a stake, and a winner and loser, if those elements exist, you've got gambling. But if those don't all exist, then you don't. If that doesn't fit the model, then it's not the gambling that we're talking about that we think the Bible condemns. Let's talk about, for instance, Jacob. It's not gambling to just take a risk.
Yes.
Gambling is sometimes people try to make it synonymous with taking a risk. But you, as you said, driving in traffic, you're taking a risk to drive in traffic. You're taking a risk if you walk across the street. But that's not gambling. The reason would be because there's no stake. You're not gaining at another's loss. You could make it a gamble. You could say, I bet you $5 you can't go across the street.
Yeah.
You know, we could make it a gambling proposition, but just the venturing out and taking some risk to do something is not gambling. Farming is a risk. Every year when a farmer puts his seed in the ground and spends a good bit of money in order to prepare the soil and buy the seed,
right,
and fertilize it and everything, he's taking a risk. If he doesn't get the rain in due time, if it frosts late or early or something else happens,
right,
he could lose his investment in the, but it's not a risk. I mean, excuse me, it is a risk, but it's not a gambling.
Right, gambling.
Because he may lose,
right,
but nobody else has gained because he lost.
Yes.
You know, so.
I mean, we can't, it'd be hard to even quantify, Monty, all the risks that we take in a day-to-day life. I mean, even folks who try to be conservative and cautious are taking enormous risk throughout the day.
You know, when you get right down to it, every breath I take, I'm risking that I'm going to breathe in some germ that's
right,
going to kill me,
right,
or make me deathly ill, or
yeah,
whatever. And so, you know, just the fact that we're alive in this world today is a risk on our part.
Yeah.
But we're not going to go out and not be alive just to eliminate that risk.
Right.
As we were saying earlier, you know, if a farmer has a good year with his crops, everybody gains, nobody loses. He gains, but nobody loses in order for him to gain because his crops did well.
Now, that's important because you went back to those elements. There has to be a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
And there is no loser if a drought hits. I mean, a winner if the drought hits, and no loser. He loses, but there's no winner. Nobody benefits.
Yeah. And if he has a good year, everybody benefits.
Right.
Nobody loses. So starting a business. There's a risk. There's a big risk associated with starting a business, but it's not gambling.
Yeah.
So just taking a risk is not gambling. Here's one, though, that some people have a problem with: buying and selling stocks. Is that gambling?
Yeah.
Well, I think at its simplest level, it is not gambling, because when you buy a stock, you're actually buying something of value.
A business, part of a business.
You're buying part of a business. It may increase or it may decrease. There's some risk involved in that. But there's no winner and loser inherent in the proposition. If the value of that stock goes up, everybody gains. Nobody has to lose in order for you to make a profit if the stock you invested in went up.
Right.
If it goes down, everybody's a loser. Everybody who's invested in that has lost. It just doesn't fit the model. I mean, now, I think there are potentially some aspects of stock trading that might come close to the definition of gambling. I think Kyle in his email mentioned this. He says investments could be a gamble in some sense. However, you would be using your own money to buy a stock or some other asset based on trading done in formal settings. Proverbs 21:5, he says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, but those of everyone who is hasty surely to poverty. The gambler risk would be if the money you invested would gain or lose value. I think that's the risk. I don't think that's not a sinful
gamble. That's not a gamble. That's a risk.
That's a risk, right? Even if you are investing money trying to grow your portfolio, there are dangers. But he mentions the love of money is a sin, so gambling for the gain could be a sin. I think covetousness could creep into stock investments.
Right.
And some of the practices that people have invented, buying, selling short, buying long, I don't even understand all that stuff. If I had the money to do that, it'd be a dangerous world indeed.
Oh, boy.
there may be some of the high-end practices that certain investors do, that could become gambling. One of the issues that we might have with gambling is the addictive nature of it. We're going to reserve comment on that till later. But if you got addictively into taking high-end risk on options, buying and selling options and all of that, that maybe could cross the line into gambling. I don't know. I'm not well enough versed in the stock market to be able to say that. But I think just buying and selling stocks at the simplest level is not gambling.
Because when it breaks down to it, you're buying and selling property, and it wouldn't be any different than buying or selling a home or buying or selling a car that may go up or down in value. It just fundamentally isn't based upon what we've outlined.
It doesn't fit the definition that we've already qualified as this is what gambling is.
Yeah.
As we're discussing it, that's wrong. And so anything that you're buying and selling, if there's a product there or something that tangible there, then it may be risky, but it's not gambling, because you've purchased something with the hope that it goes up in value and that someone else would recognize that value and buy it from you at that point. So that's not... When you get down to it, Jesus in the parable of the men with the talents, there was a five-talent man and a two-talent man and a one-talent man. The five-talent man and the two-talent man took the money that has been given to them and invested it. It specifically says that.
And there must have been some risk involved, because the one-talent man was afraid.
He recognized that risk, he didn't do it. And he was actually condemned, because Jesus said you could have at least took it to the bank and got interest.
Yeah.
If you didn't understand investment,
so those other guys
you could have done something.
I think that's a good point, Mike. Right. Those other guys must have been investing at risk, because the one-talent man, I wasn't willing to take a risk. I was afraid. Yeah. And so I think that's a good point.
Right, good point.
All right, so I think we take buying at its basic level. Now, again, there are some practices of some in the stock market that I don't even understand that might cross the line into gambling, but just buying and selling stocks, no, I don't think so. I've heard people say buying insurance is like gambling, and I never have really understood that. When you're buying insurance, you're actually trying to limit your risk. You're buying financial protection. Really, everybody gains from the proposition. I don't, a company Now, I guess maybe they might be saying the risk, the gamble is on the part of the company. Let's say you bought life insurance.
Right.
And the life insurance company is saying, I think you'll outlive this policy. I think you'll live to be 85, and you're only buying insurance until you're 75. And so we think we're going to win this deal.
Right.
Well, it's really not the same thing as a winner and a loser. I win because I have the protection afforded to me and my family by holding that insurance policy in my hand. They win because in the large pool of people they've got who are buying those policies, they come out ahead. And some people die sooner than others. Others live longer than others. But they have actuaries who are studying all the probabilities, and they're not taking an uncalculated risk. They know that they're going to end up making money on this in the long run.
Right.
So they're making money. I'm gaining the value of the protection afforded to me. This doesn't fit the model of gambling.
Right, and you don't intend to use the policy. I don't know that anybody buys insurance planning to use it. You're hoping that
Unless you're trying to defraud somebody, that would be a sin.
Right, okay. Timothy in the chat room says, my grandfather was half Cherokee, which makes me 1/8 Native American. Native Americans on reservations are well known as the poorest people in the United States. This is strongly due to gambling. My aunt was addicted to gambling and almost bankrupt her family, and due to this, almost lost her marriage. So
there you
appreciate
go. Timothy that's some of this world consequences of gambling. I think you're exactly right, Timothy.
And Josh says, people want to gamble in order to get rich quickly. The Bible has commanded us to work for our living. The get-rich-quick idea is widespread. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10 shows that mindset to be vanity, not to mention the fact that we are supposed to be good stewards of what we have been given. And so he references Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, which says, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This is also vanity. We see the folly in that get-rich-quick idea. Thank you for that, Josh.
Right. Real quickly, we're going to take a break here again, and then we're going to get to the heart of the matter. What is sinful about gambling when we come back from our break? But I've heard people say, if you enter a contest in which there are prizes offered, you're gambling. I don't think so. You know, there are all kind of contests where all you have to do is fill out a card and hand it in. You're not putting up a stake. You don't have anything at risk. Now it's a uncertain event whether you will win it or not. You might win, but if you win, nobody else loses. They're not losing a stake that they put up in order to enter the contest. So really, a contest with prizes is not gambling either.
I was thinking of the passage that Paul mentioned about competing for a crown. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25, every man that striveth for mastery is temperate in all things. No, they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. Paul doesn't condemn the folks for
winning a prize.
There was a prize involved. They wanted to win that crown, and he doesn't condemn that.
Yeah. Finally, real quick, before we take a break, let's make this point. Gambling is not determined by the size or the degree. It's a matter of kind, not degree. People saying, well, the Powerball lottery only costs $2.
Right.
You know, what's so bad about it? Just $2. Well, that's not what makes it gambling. It's not the amount or the level of
the principle.
It's the principle. Right. It doesn't matter if it's $2 or $200. It doesn't matter if it's matching pennies or flipping for a Coke. That's as much gambling as the lottery or going to Las Vegas. Gamblers Anonymous. Isn't it interesting that there is such a thing as Gamblers Anonymous? We'll talk a little bit more about that when we go on. But Gamblers Anonymous urges members not to even flip coins to see who's going to buy coffee today at the break table.
Okay.
If you're a gambler, flipping coins to see who buys coffee, that's gambling. And they say, don't do it. It's an insignificant amount of money. Don't do it because it puts you on that track.
All right.
So we've talked about what is required to be gambling. We've talked about some of the things that are not gambling. Just let me summarize by listing a whole lot of things that I think would be gambling. The lottery. Horse races, dog races, slot machines, raffle tickets, bingo, pitching pennies, flipping for a Coke or a cup of coffee, roulette, dice, poker, games, of any sort in which there is, you put up a stake in order to play in it. Sports, gambling on elections, all of that sort of thing, those would fit the bill. Some of these other things we said don't fit the bill, but there's a lot of things out there that do fit the bill of gambling.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we want to get your thoughts. What is wrong with gambling? Why do you think it's a sin? Let us know.
We haven't had anybody take us up on arguing in favor of gambling.
No. Nope.
And I doubt that we will. So let's talk about what's wrong with it.
What's wrong with it when we get back? Don't go anywhere. The Virtual Bible Study will continue right after this.
Are you listening? There's going to be a test on this stuff. Stay tuned. The Virtual Bible Study will be right back after this.
I'm Arthur Haynes from Kalilka, Tennessee, and one of my greatest highlights of the week is to listen to the Virtual Bible Study.
This is Greg Gwynn with this week's bullet point. One of the great blessings that God has for His children is the fellowship that they can enjoy as members of a local congregation. We believe that this involvement in a local church is an important part of God's plan for our spiritual well-being. In this special spiritual family, there are things that are expected of all members. Here are some of the things that will help bring praise and glory to God as we work together in the local church. First, each of us must realize that the example we set in the local community has a great potential for good or evil. As a member of a local church, it is expected that you will live a pure moral life, one that others will be able to observe and imitate. Matthew chapter 5, verse 16. The world accepts and even encourages immoral activities, but as Christians, we are not to be of this world. 1 John 2, beginning verse 15. Secondly, we believe that it is the responsibility of each member to seek opportunities to serve their brothers and sisters. Too many view the church from a selfish perspective and seem interested only in what might be done for them. Instead, we understand that greatness in the Lord's kingdom comes from providing humble service, Matthew 23, beginning verse 11. We are to, quote, rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep, Romans 12, verse 15. There will be many occasions to share in one another's joys and with tenderness and sympathy to bear one another's burdens. As a member of a local body, your help is needed in these important ways. Third, unfortunately, there will be times when a brother or sister may slip back and begin to engage in sinful activities. You will be expected to exercise a care and watchfulness for your brethren in these matters, Hebrews 3, verse 13. There are times when we need to faithfully warn, rebuke, and admonish a fellow member, 2 Timothy 4, verse 2, Galatians 6, verse 1. This may even lead to the unpleasant task of withdrawing from an unruly Christian, 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 14. Yet your full support is necessary and expected when such is necessary. Fourth, we have a primary mission to spread the gospel to the lost people of this world, Mark 16, verse 15. There are always many in the immediate community and millions worldwide who need to hear about salvation in Christ Jesus. We need the participation of every member to address this urgent need. You can and must do your part to teach the lost souls within your circle of influence. Fifth, it should go without saying that every member of a local congregation should attend every assembly of the saints, Hebrews 10, 25. You should make every effort to attend each of the scheduled services. Personal schedules should be rearranged, activities dropped or modified, and plans made that will allow you to be present at all the worship assemblies and Bible studies. School functions, recreational or sporting events, family get-togethers, or things of this sort do not serve as legitimate excuses for missing any service. Sickness and other unavoidable circumstances may occasionally arise, but the normal practice of every saint should be to attend every assembly. Sixth, the only means authorized by God for the financing of the work of the local church is by means of the free will offering of the members. Such a contribution is collected each Lord's Day, 1 Corinthians 16, verses 1 and 2. You are expected to give regularly and liberally, 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. If travels or other matters cause you to be away from the congregation on the Lord's Day, it certainly seems reasonable that provisions would be made to leave your contribution in advance or make up your offering when you return. The ongoing work of the local church depends upon your consistent giving. And finally, every member of a local body of believers has a personal responsibility to maintain peace with and among their fellow members, Ephesians 4, beginning verse 1. We acknowledge that situations arise wherein feelings may become hurt or bad judgments may lead to disagreements. It is the duty of each Christian to seek immediate resolution of these matters, Matthew 5, 24, and Matthew 18, beginning verse 15. Our rule is this: in matters of faith or doctrine, we can make no compromise, Jude verse 3. However, in matters of judgment or opinion, we should be humbly submissive, 1 Peter 5, verse 6. Troublemakers, gossips, and those who promote strife cannot be tolerated, Proverbs 6, beginning verse 16. So, your conscientious effort to fulfill your personal responsibilities in the local congregation are critical to our effectiveness and to bring glory to the Lord. That's this week's bullet point. Think about it.
Missed a recent virtual Bible study program? Listen to any of our past programs from the archive section of our website. Now, back to the virtual Bible study.
We're back on the program tonight, and as the announcer just mentioned, you can catch us on our website anytime you miss a program or go back and listen to the 10 plus, almost 11, we're going on 11 years now, of the virtual Bible study. Check it out. TheVirtualBibleStudy.com is the address to use. TheVirtualBibleStudy.com. If you've never been there, check it out. You can find out more about us, what we believe, what we practice, and you can find out directions to come and meet with us. If you're in the Columbia, Tennessee area, we'd love for you to come and be with us. As we talk about gambling on the program tonight, Timothy in the chat room says, why is it the poorest neighborhoods are the ones with the most gambling? This is proven in the area of South Dallas in the area of Oak Cliff, which is the poorest part of town. The most lottery tickets are bought in this area. Why is this? This is a poor people tax, Timothy concludes. This tax helps the middle class for the most part, in which it helps with college tuition.
Yeah, I've always thought that, and that's one of the principles I want to talk about here in a minute. But you think about this, a lot of people justify the lottery because the money, supposedly the profits of it, are being used for education, especially college education, to fund scholarships and so forth. If you think about that, wealthy people are not buying lottery tickets.
Right.
Poor people are buying lottery tickets because they're hoping to get rich. Rich people are already rich, and they're too smart to spend their money on a wild risk, unlikely prospect of winning a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
So poor people are buying them. Rich people aren't. So the money's coming from the poor people. What are they using the money for? Yeah. To send the rich people's kids to school?
Right.
That's just crazy. I think that's one of the greatest social injustices that exists in our country today. You know, people all up in the arms about social injustice. Well, right there's, I think, probably one of the biggest culprits of social injustice, taking money from the poor to send the rich kids to school. That's just wrong.
Well, guest 3588 says, why are such activities always prefaced as helping children or to pay for education if it were such an innocent pursuit? And they sort of shrouded in the don't worry about the moral issues of this. Look
because
at the good we can
good.
Use it for.
All right. Let me suggest some things, and you all chime in with some of these things that I think makes gambling a sin. First of all, as we hinted at earlier, gambling is addictive. I think it's interesting that there is such a thing as Gamblers Anonymous. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
If there's, you know, we think of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why do we have to have Alcoholics Anonymous? Because people get addicted to alcohol, right?
Right.
So why is there Gambling Anonymous? Because people get addicted to gambling too.
Yeah.
A fella named Horace Livingston, in a book called The Science of Chance, said, quote, gamblers gamble as lovers love, as drunkards drink, inevitably, blindly, under the dictates of a vicious force, or irresistible force, excuse me. So they operate under the dictates of an irresistible force.
Yeah.
So they're addicted to it. Now, where will we go in the Bible to show that we should not do things that are addictive? Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, Paul says, I will not be brought under the power of anything.
Right.
The New American Standard Version says, I will not be mastered by anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea of an addiction. And Paul said he wouldn't let that happen to him, and we as Christians should not let that happen to us either. I think that verse states the principle of not doing things that prove to be addictive.
All right. 877-381-4567. We know of sports figures have been notorious over the years for being addicted to gambling. Pete Rose, others who have just lost all sense of control and ruined their lives because of this addiction.
Yeah, exactly right. So, and anybody who would argue that it's not, it just hasn't done any research on the subject, because all kinds of information say people get addicted to gambling.
All right.
Why do people go broke? In other words, let's say I take $10,000 and go to Las Vegas. And I lose the first $1,000. All right, I'm getting out of here. I've still got nine. I'm not going to lose the rest. No, what do I do? I keep spending. I end up broke. But when good sense would have told me, don't do it to start with. Certainly after you've lost part of it, save the rest of it. No, because I'm drawn in. I'm addicted to it. I'm sucked into the addictive nature of the practice.
All right. Yes, 3588 chimes in with another comment that's beneficial. Proverbs 15, verse 27. He who is greedy for gain troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. And that goes go along with that idea of addictiveness, is that greedy for gain, you're troubling your own house.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
So addiction is one problem. A second problem that makes gambling sinful is covetousness.
And that's along the lines of what Kyle has said in the chat room. He says the lottery, under the guise of funding scholarship, I'm sorry, this is in his email, funding scholarships, feeds on the public's desire for greed. Greed is covetousness, as in Romans 1, verses 28 through 32, and he quotes that, and as even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, and the list of sins goes on. But covetousness is one of those things that those with the reprobate mind that have totally forsaken God pursue. And he goes on and says, for an act to be gambling in the covetous sense, I would say there is a prize, trying to attain what you haven't earned through earnest labor. It's pooling the money of many at risk in the hopes of a windfall. For the lottery pockets half the money spent on tickets and put the rest in the pot, and the cycle starts again. And so he says it is covetousness. That is wanting what someone else has and wanting to take that from them.
Covetousness, by definition, is an inordinate desire to gain without giving something of equal value, to get at the expense of others is the idea of covetousness. It fits perfectly what gambling is. Colossians 3, verse 5 in the New American Standard Version says, therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. The King James Version says covetousness, which is idolatry. Covetousness is a sin. Kyle went on in his email to mention 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. 1 Timothy 6, 10 says, the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So covetousness is a big part of the defining sin of gambling. It is covetousness. It fits that definition exactly, and that's why Christians certainly should not. And again, it's not whether they're gambling big sums of money, even a little bit, is exposing that covetousness in us. We want that, and we want to get without giving. We have an inordinate desire to gain of this world's goods.
All right, so we've talked about two things that we believe the scriptures show that would be wrong. Again, the scriptures don't explicitly say don't gamble. Gambling is a sin in those words. But it sets forth principles that we could use in application, principles that we use in application on a wide variety of subjects, not just gambling, where we compare the action with the principles that are stated in the scriptures, and we determine if that action is acceptable or if it's not. We're comparing the act of gambling with principles presented in the scriptures. We see two principles here that cause us to understand that gambling is something that must be avoided. It is addictive, and furthermore, it is an act of covetousness, which is condemned, and we simply cannot be engaged in acts of covetousness. We need to take a break, and when we get back to go to the top of the hour, maybe some of our listeners will tell us arguments they believe support the act, and if not, we're going to look at more principles that we believe show that the act of gambling must be avoided. We'll take your thoughts on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We'll go to the top of the hour right after this.
Have you checked out all of the resources on collegeview.com lately? Check it out now while you listen to these important messages. The virtual Bible study will be right back after this.
This is Monty Overton, a member of the College View Church of Christ. Thanks for listening to the virtual Bible study. We appreciate your interest in the Bible. It is, after all, God's message to us. We thought you might be encouraged by a poem written by A.Z. Conrad entitled, The Bible Stands. It goes like this. Century follows century, there it stands. Empires rise and fall and are forgotten, there it stands. Dynasty succeeds dynasty, there it stands. Kings are crowned and uncrowned, there it stands. Emperors decree its extermination, there it stands. Atheists rail against it, there it stands. Agnostics smile cynically, there it stands. Profane, prayerless punsters caricature it, there it stands. Unbelief abandons it, there it stands. Higher critics deny its claimed inspiration. There it stands. The flames are kindled against it. There it stands. The tooth of time gnaws but makes no dent in it. There it stands. Infidels predict its abandonment. There it stands. Modernism tries to explain it away. There it stands.
We're tracking trends on the virtual Bible study. Nearly all Americans age 15 and over, 96% in fact, engaged in some sort of leisure activity. Watching TV was the leisure activity that occupied the most time, 2.8 hours per day, and that accounted for more than half of leisure time on average for those 15 and over. That information is via the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Word of God says in Ephesians 5, beginning verse 15, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil."
Share your comment with the world. Call in now and be a part of the virtual Bible study. Now, back to the program.
Back on the program, going to the top of the hour, talking about gambling and what the scriptures teach on. Again, we're looking at principles since we can't find anywhere the word, we can't find the word gamble or gambling in the scriptures, but principles must guide our lives. And we're looking at principles that gambling would violate.
Interesting question from in the chat room from 9878 in the chat room says, "Could some churches that are heavy into the prosperity gospel be considered similar to gambling? People are giving more money to the collection plate expecting a greater reward." Well, of course, that we have a lot of times addressed the health and wealth gospel on the virtual Bible study. We think it's completely erroneous, of course. But I don't think it would fit the mold of or the definition of gambling as we've defined it tonight. Because if I give $1,000 into the collection plate under the hope of getting $10,000 back, if that happened, I don't think that happens. You know, some of those false teachers at these mega churches and on television will try to make those kind of promises. So they're not telling the truth. But if it did happen, who would lose? Nobody would be a loser in that kind of a deal. So there's not a winner and a loser in that sort of an arrangement. So it wouldn't be. There's lots wrong with it. I think there's lots wrong with it, but I don't think it would be gambling by definition.
Okay. All right. Timothy in the chat room, devil's advocate. Does Solomon say, time and chance happen to them all? Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11. He does say that in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11. Does that then say, well, I can throw dice, I can buy lottery tickets because time and chance is going to happen to us all?
That's really not talking about anything financial or a stake.
Look, it could be financial, but it's not necessarily a stake.
Yeah, you know, I might get robbed on the way home tonight. Someone might stop me at gunpoint and take whatever little money I've got in my wallet. Time and chance happens there, and people get robbed. I mean, it you know. But that's not the same as gambling, so I don't think that.
And he's just throwing that in there for the sake of discussion, I think. Okay. Josh says, "I've heard people claim that if they won the lottery, then they would give part of the money to the Lord." Saul tried to justify his disobedience by saying that there would be a sacrifice in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 19 through 22. It's a good parallel, Josh.
I think that's a good point, Josh. You know, Saul tried to argue to Samuel, "Well, it's okay that I didn't obey the God. Oh, I didn't obey God because we are going to give some of this in sacrifice to God that we weren't supposed to bring back, but we did, but we're going to offer it as sacrifice, so that'll make it okay, won't it?" No, it won't. And Samuel plainly told him that, you know, God wants obedience rather than sacrifice.
And guess 9878 says, "Could some churches that are heavily into the prosperity gospel be considered similar to gambling?"
That's what I was just
talking. Oh, you did? I'm sorry. Well, yeah, people are throwing in their money, yeah.
I don't think it's gambling. Yeah, right, there's a lot wrong with it, but I don't think it's gambling. Okay.
And Tim references Ephesians 4:28, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands that which is good, that he may have something to give him who has need." Timothy says work ethic is violated. The work ethic we see here in Ephesians 4, verse 28, is violated with the act of gambling.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I think it's wrong. It violates what we call the legitimate transfer of money or property. The Bible describes the way I might transfer something to you, or you might transfer something to me. The ways that we can gain or exchange things of value is by labor, and I think Ephesians 4:28 that he mentions is a good verse along that. We can do it by trade, you know. Or I can sell something. I can exchange. In other words, In Acts chapter 4, the Christians who had property sold it so they could give the money to the needy, other needy Christians in the Jerusalem church. So that would be fair exchange. So labor, fair exchange, giving of gifts, that's one way that we can make an exchange of things of value. I don't know really anything else that the Bible defines as a legitimate means of transferring money or property. Labor, fair exchange, gifts. Certainly gambling's not in that.
He also references 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 11 and 12, that you aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands, as we commanded you, that you may walk properly towards those who are outside, and that you may lack nothing. Again, he references that biblical work ethic that's presented, which would be contradicting the idea of gambling.
All right.
And he goes on, Timothy adds, most of those who win the lottery later turn up bankrupt.
That's another one of the things I had on my list that would make gambling sinful, and that is it's just purely bad stewardship. And I think we are expected to be good stewards of the things God has blessed us with. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 10. 1 Timothy 4, verse 10 says, as every man hath received the gift, so minister the same one to another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. And I think that's talking especially about spiritual blessings, but I think the principle would apply to physical blessings as well. God expects us to be good stewards. I had a quote here from about a man named John W. Bet-A-Million Gates.
Oh, wow.
So his name was John W. Gates, but his nickname was Bet-A-Million Gates.
Bet-A-Million.
He was famous for bridge at $1,000 a point, $50,000 a hand at poker. He ended up giving this advice: don't gamble, don't bet on cards, don't bet on horse races, don't throw dice. You know why he gave that advice?
No.
He died broke.
Ah.
Bet-A-Million Gates, he died broke. It's bad stewardship. And I think that's what Timothy was suggesting in the chat room.
Monty, we've been quiet on that end of the board tonight. What do you think?
Well, as we quite often talk about, the Bible authorizes us. We look to the authority of the Bible for basically every aspect of our life. And as we were just talking about a minute ago, the Bible has given us authority to work for a living, to make money. As we talked about, he's given us authority to trade goods or invest to make money. And he's talked about giving gifts to make money. And like Greg said, it basically falls, our ways of receiving money or value is covered in those three things, and gambling is clearly outside that. So if we didn't have any other reasons like addictions or covetousness or whatever, it's outside the way that God has authorized us to.
For authority.
We don't have authority to do gambling in order to increase our wealth.
All right. I like what Kyle says here, and this is a good way to get our thoughts headed towards the end of the program. He says, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 10 through 11 says, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which some, having coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. We need to be content in what we have. Look to the example of Paul in Philippians 4, verses 9 through 13. Those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me do, and the God of peace shall be with you. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased and how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. And Kyle says we need to be content. And part of that being content would be avoiding the love of money, which is the root of all evil.
So lack of a contentment is another thing that makes it sinful.
Yeah.
Right. I got a couple other things real quickly here. Another thing I think makes it wrong is it violates the principles of love and the golden rule.
All right.
You know the so-called golden rule.
Right.
In Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, all things whatsoever you would that man should do unto you, do you even so to them, for this is the law and prophets. I want to take that guy's money. I want to gain at his loss.
Yeah.
That's not right. You know, and I'm not manifesting a love for others when I do that. So I think it violates the principles of love and the golden rule. And then something that we cannot overlook is that gambling is associated with all other kinds of evil. I had a statistic here about Atlantic City in New Jersey, where it has become famous for the casinos there. Before the casinos were legalized and built in Atlantic City, there were 5,000 crimes per year that were reported. The first year the casinos were open, there were 12,000 crimes. Crime more than doubled in 1 year's time with legalized gambling. Jimmy the Greek, some of our listeners will remember Jimmy the Greek. He's dead now, but he was a famous gambler. He was very famous gambling on sporting events in particular. But Jimmy the Greek said, quote, "When you put legalized gambling into a community, you ruin the community."
Wow.
Again, this is not a new problem. George Washington is quoted as having said that gambling is the child of avarice, that's, of course, greed, and the brother of iniquity, the father of mischief. George Washington said that. J. Edgar Hoover, famous with the FBI of a generation ago, said gambling is a vicious evil. It corrupts our youth and blights the lives of adults. It becomes the springboard for other crimes, embezzlement, robbery, and even murder. You know, Jesus said in Matthew 7, verse 20, "By their fruits ye shall know them."
Right.
The evil fruits of gambling are well known, and all of those would be reasons why a child of God would stay far away from it.
All right. Excellent comments. Now, Timothy says, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 20, 17 through 20, "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of their ignorance that is in, of the ignorance that is in them, because of the dark blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ." Timothy concludes, "Those who are blind because of sin have problems seeing the issues with gambling." And certainly,
I think that's right. You know, I have known Christians, and I wouldn't want to venture a guess as to how many professed Christians and were buying lottery tickets this week on that $1.5 billion Powerball drawing. I've known Christians who've tried to justify it, but there's no justification for it.
It's become socially acceptable.
Yeah.
And things that are socially acceptable usually are acceptable to Christians.
And what I've said a lot of times is we're not out here at the leading edge of this increased immorality, but we're letting the world drag us along pretty closely behind.
Right. Timothy says gambling and alcohol increase crime in the area in which have been allowed when restricted. So certainly know them by their fruits. Christians need to start judging their activities by the scriptures, not by what the world around them thinks is okay.
And you know, how strong is our conviction? I'm pretty strong against this gambling thing, but man, if that Powerball gets up over $1 billion,
maybe it's okay. Just this once.
I'll just do a little.
Right.
It doesn't matter what the potential reward might be. If it's an evil reward gained by a immoral act, we can't justify it.
Monty, closing thoughts.
You know, like you said, it doesn't matter what the reward is. If we gain the whole world and lost our soul, we've lost it all. So it's a sinful activity. We need to avoid sinful activities. And this one's something easy to do. Just say no and don't do it.
That's right. I don't have to do that. I don't have to do any of it. You know, some sins are just cut and dried, black and white. You know, for instance, we talk about drinking. And someone tries to compare drinking with overeating. Well, they're not parallel at all. I have to eat some, and so I have to guard against overeating.
Yeah.
I don't have to drink any.
I don't have to gamble any.
And I don't have to gamble any. That's just shut that off completely. You know, never even deal with that.
All right, here's a question. We're out of time. I got called on the carpet by a lady one time for using the phrase, "I bet." What do you think about that, Monty? Yeah. I bet it's cold outside.
Well, we had a virtual Bible study a while back where we talked about figures of speech that we might use and euphemisms.
Yeah.
And we discussed in that we need to make sure we understand the figures of speech we're using to make sure we're not saying something we shouldn't mean. Make sure we understand what it means. And maybe we shouldn't say, "I bet that it's cold outside." I mean, I don't have to use that phrase.
Yeah, and but I think people, I agree.
I think people nitpick us to death sometimes over things like that.
And the thing of it is, expressions change meaning over time, too. And, you know, that figure of speech has come to mean "I imagine."
Yeah.
It is my guess that it's really cold outside right now. I bet it's cold outside.
Nobody is
thinks
assuming that you're making a wager.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. 3588 says sin will always take you farther than you wanted to go or intended to go. And Timothy says if the Powerball was divided amongst every American, each individual in the U.S. would have 4.3 million.
I think we missed a decimal point there someplace.
Maybe $4.33. Yeah, $4.33.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. 9878 was quick with the calculator on that. So.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Good discussion tonight.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you guys for your time. Thank you, Monty.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you for joining us on the program tonight. Hope you benefited from our study and discussion of God's Word. Hope you make plans to be back here this time next week for another edition of the Virtual Bible Study. In the meantime, we encourage you to put God first in your life. Study His inspired Word of the Bible. Live by it every day. You'll never regret it.
Thanks for listening to the Virtual Bible Study, brought to you by the College View Church of Christ. The College View Church of Christ meets at 1618 Hampshire Pike in Columbia, Tennessee. If you are in the Columbia, Tennessee area, we encourage you to worship with the College View Church of Christ on Sunday mornings at 9:30 and on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. The College View Church of Christ also welcomes you to attend their Wednesday night Bible studies at 7 o'clock. If you have any questions about something that was said on tonight's broadcast or would like more information about the College View Church of Christ, please call 931-381-4567. That number again, 931-381-4567. Or for more information on the internet, visit collegeview.com. Be sure to tune into the Virtual Bible Study this time next Thursday for another informative study of God's Word.